It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Sit down for the most unique dinner date you've ever experienced. Because the dinner conversation is about to get testy with Bob. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Oh, this is great. Play the whole thing. I'll have a nap. See you in about 19 minutes.
In a god of a fleet of honor, don't you know that I'm loving you? In a god of a fleet of paper, don't you know that I'll always be true?
Just occurred to me, I know how to get rid of the anthem, playing anthems at the beginning of sporting events. Canada adopts Inagata Davida as the national anthem. They play it once, and that'll be the end of that. Yeah, turn your mic on.
How did you get on this anthem discussion? Where did this come from?
Well, Deitch and I are talking about various Super Bowl things,
and
we're talking about Lady Gaga's performance.
And the double anthem.
Yeah, and then I said, well, they play two anthems because, you know, it's America. You know, they got to be bigger and better than everybody else. Bunch of egomaniacs. I'm one of them.
Yes.
And then he said he thought Lady Gaga's performance was the best, and I thought Whitney Houston's performance was the best. But I like Lady Gaga a lot.
Hold on. Do we have the tape from yesterday where it said, Bob, what did you think, Gaga? She was okay. That's all.
Well, she wasn't Whitney Houston.
No.
That's what I said.
No, you did not give her 1 ounce of credit for her anthem yesterday.
Well, you talked me into it.
She was very good. I give her number two.
Well, that's what I just gave her.
No, Bob. You cannot flip like that.
Yes, I can.
Who do you think you are?
When you have your own show, you can flip.
Do you think you're a Republican candidate? You can flip?
No, I ought to be.
No, you'd be a Democrat.
I would be a Democrat, but I'd run in the Republican Party because they're a bunch of boobs. I could win that. I could win that.
I'm sorry. This is an exciting day for me. I love this day.
What?
New Hampshire.
Tonight.
The primaries tonight. This is great.
Yeah, except we know what's going to happen.
Tell me what's going to. Okay. Can we record this, please? We're going to run it tomorrow. Tell me what's going to happen.
Well, Trump's going to win on the Republican side by probably a fairly wide margin.
Okay.
And then.
Bernie?
Well, Bernie's going to win on the Democrat side.
Okay.
Don't you think?
I do, but I really think...
I mean, I don't think... It's not close enough for there to be an upset, I don't think. Now, the one interesting thing, statistics I saw, not to dwell on the primaries.
This is good dwelling.
But I saw a statistic that said 50% of those that will vote in New Hampshire are undecided.
Yeah. Well, most in the state are independent. And that's why it's probably a better barometer about what America's going through right now than any other primary or any other caucus.
So I guess if you've got 50% undecided, then anything can happen. But all the polls suggest that Hillary's going to lose and Trump's going to win.
Yeah.
And that's really the essence of it.
I think the key thing, though, is that who is going to be second or third for the Republicans, because that sets up the rest of the primaries. Because right now,
do you think anybody will pull out on the Republican side
tomorrow? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. But what's going to happen, Bob, is like, I say we in the, like, because I love watching it. We can't have Trump, Cruz, Rubio is the only three alternatives in the Republican Party.
Because that's no alternative for the Republican Party.
It is. It just can't happen.
Do you think if Trump gets the nomination, do you think he can win the general election?
No.
You don't, huh?
No. No, I don't. I don't think a Republican can win the general.
I don't think they can. I think they're all idiots. Yeah.
The problem becomes is what's going to happen is the fear-mongering that will occur if Bernie Sanders wins, because they're going to call him a socialist, and we're going to have pictures of Karl Marx and Trotsky.
Well, he is a socialist.
He's a democratic socialist.
He's more
conservative than most Canadian politicians. He's more conservative than most Canadian politicians.
Well, if you want to compare the parties, I mean, the Democratic Party would be the Liberal Party, and he is not extremely liberal. He's far more conservative.
And if Hillary wins, we're going to hear all about Whitewater again. We're going to hear about Benghazi again.
I got
we're
news for
hear
you.
About,
I think she's going to lose again.
So, I mean, it's vicious right now. I mean, it's vicious. The catcalling between Jeb Bush and Donald Trump yesterday, if you're on the Twitter sphere,
well,
it is unbelievable.
Well, get Bush out of there. I don't think he's as dumb as his brother, but he's pretty dumb. I don't like him at all.
I think he has the same problem that Teddy Kennedy had. By the time it was his turn, people were tired of him.
We're tired of the Kennedys, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Anyway, that's enough. I love American politics. So this is, I get in trouble more at home about talking American politics than I do watching hockey. So. Do you get paid to watch American politics?
Well, no, but who would you vote for?
Who would I vote for?
Would you consider yourself a Republican or a Democrat?
No, I'm a Democrat's Democrat.
Are you a liberal?
Very much so.
You are, huh?
Yeah.
See, the interesting thing for me is I'm a conservative, generally speaking.
You're an entrepreneur. You're a free enterpriser. You should be a Republican, Bob.
I understand that.
You should be a Republican.
I should be a Republican, but they just keep running out these stupid people. I can't remember the last Republican I liked. Was Ike a Republican? Ike was
yes.
a Republican. He'd be my last guy.
No, come on.
Was Ike a Democrat?
No, Ike was a Republican.
No, he's a Democrat.
But
he's a Republican.
You were four.
Yeah, well, but in hindsight.
Hey.
I mean, there hasn't been one since then. Nixon? Reagan? The Bushes?
Ronald Reagan was a bozo. Ronald Reagan is just like you. He started as a Democrat and turned Republican.
Well, he's an idiot. Was an idiot.
He is?
No, he's not. He isn't an is anymore. Blair crawling in under the set.
What is that? Oh, sit way over there.
You don't have to sit over there.
Sit way over there.
Sit over here. Well, we understand you snuck in. I don't know why
a little move under the camera.
I don't know why we schedule people to come in at that time, and you know you got to crawl under the cameras.
Keep it fresh.
See, if you had microphones out there, Bob, Jeff could sit out there, and we could talk to him through the glass.
It's happening. It's coming. It's coming.
So could I actually sit like at that bar?
Yeah, we might, and then we'd come.
We're going to be doing that.
We're going to come out and join you.
That's awesome.
We're going to go out to the bar and have a chat at the bar
and a cappuccino.
We got a camera out there. We got lights out there.
And have a cappuccino machine.
Yeah. We're going to have headsets. We're going to get rid of these stupid things.
And if we get the cappuccinos, I'm going to buy the biscotti.
Okay.
I will bring the biscotti.
Don't you hate the anthem?
The national anthem?
No, don't say it that
but
way.
Before
the sporting event.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's stupid.
It's the dumbest, you know, I mean, it goes back to the Second World War. It's dumb.
No, it actually goes back to... The
First World War, doesn't it?
Well, actually, it goes back to the mid-1800s in baseball.
Either way, it's dumb.
It is dumb.
It's not a military event. It's not a political event. I'm there to watch a game. Doesn't make me feel any more Canadian. Doesn't make me feel any less Canadian. You know what? Go to a soccer match in the UK or Germany. They don't play. They play the silly league anthem, but they don't play the national anthem. That's the way it should be. I don't mind it at Olympics.
Are you guys
stuff
old?
Like that.
Are you guys old enough to remember when if you went to the last movie of the night in a theater,
yes.
Oh,
sure.
They played the anthem,
yes.
And everybody tried to get out before the anthem
yes,
started.
They did. Yes,
so
they
you
did.
Didn't have to stand there.
Yes, they did.
Remember that?
Yes, yes.
Like
school assembly, you sang "O Canada" at the beginning and "God Save the Queen" at the
Absolutely.
End.
Absolutely, we did the same thing. It was every day, and then it became every 2 days, and then it became once a week, and then it became special occasions. Yeah.
But "God Save the Queen" too. I mean, that was.
I'm not being unpatriotic.
No, you're being smart.
Well, come on. Why? What's the relevance of the anthem at sporting? John Tory's going to be on tomorrow. I'm going to get him to explain it. He's the mayor.
He could fix that,
couldn't he?
Yeah.
I don't have to go to Trudeau, do I?
Yeah.
I'm
not a big fan of Trudeau.
What? No, you're not Mr. Sunny Ways? Oh, I thought you'd be Sunny Ways.
I like
Sunny Ways.
I liked his dad a bit, but his dad was nuts too.
Now, who you're suggesting Justin's nuts, or are you?
Yeah, I think this prime minister's.
You do?
No, I'm going to send us down the wrong road.
Really?
Well, he already raised.
But you're a Republican, so.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, yeah.
There is a cure for that now, you know. They.
I'm a Democrat in America, and I'm a conservative in Canada.
You're not a Democrat, Bob.
I am.
You're not a Democrat. You make too much money to be a Democrat.
Now you're sounding like Donald Trump again.
You make too much money to be a Democrat.
Yeah, but I don't make it in the U.S., pal.
Well, that's true. Okay,
So, you know, from afar, I can be a Democrat.
That's true.
I like all their candidates. This last guy was a bit of a...
The Democrat.
No. I mean, I like, historically...
Oh, okay.
You know, I loved Kennedy.
Michael Dukakis? You liked Michael Dukakis?
Well, no, there's some idiots, but...
Clinton was great.
I loved Clinton.
Yeah?
This last guy, Obama, was lame.
Are you kidding me?
No, he was lame. He didn't really do anything. Now, mind you, he had a Republican Senate and a Republican Congress, and he couldn't
Not
really...
Not at the beginning.
Well, he didn't get anything done.
By the midterms, he had a Republican Congress and a Republican Senate.
I think he was. I was disappointed in his performance as president.
I think a lot of people were.
The American economy's coming back. Unemployment's under 5% in the United States. I mean,
yeah, but that's false. I mean, unemployment's under 5%, and you know, more people are using food stamps. I mean, that's dumb. Unemployment's under 5%. There's such a disconnect. But what are we talking about this for?
I don't know.
You brought it up. Well,
okay,
I didn't bring it up. You wanted to talk politics.
There's such a disconnect between people making big money and the average person. The American economy's doing okay, but how many of those jobs are sustainable?
Good question.
You know, vote for Bernie Sanders. You know what? Sometimes you just got to throw a bomb into the system. You just got to go.
Well, as he said, it's time for a revolution.
Yep.
Before we get to the baseball stuff, you know what I heard the other day?
What?
Lots and lots and lots of Americans are coming across the border to buy something. You know what they're buying?
Prescription drugs.
No.
Yeah, they are.
Well, maybe, but.
No, what?
Cars.
See, can you do that? Can you buy a car?
Well, the auto pack.
Yeah, you can.
It's the auto pack.
But if you buy a car in the States and take it back.
You just have to pay the taxes.
Really?
Okay. Just the taxes.
Hmm.
You know?
It's because
with the exchange rate right now, Bob.
Oof. With the exchange rate being what it is, guys can get cars for, like, even with the tax, 20-25% less than what they can in the U.S.
You just can only get four colors. No, seriously.
I mean, gray, black, white.
Well, no, but go if you
That's right.
If
it
you go
right.
on a U.S. website.
For $99, you go and get the car painted at Mr. Paint Jobs.
It's not original.
It is. Do you remember when they used to actually have a palette for you could pick colors for your cars? Now it's, we got silver, slightly more silver, slightly more silver and
white.
Black and white.
Yeah, but even if you compare the two websites between, you go and build your car, there's the palette to build a car in the United States, you get 16 or 20 colors. Here we get four.
Yeah.
Four.
Oh, wait, you had a red car.
Yeah.
That little Cooper or whatever it was you had was red,
wasn't
it?
I had a bug.
Was it a bug?
Yeah, I had a bug and I had a Cooper.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wasn't the Cooper red too?
No, Cooper wasn't red.
Oh, I thought it was.
Cooper was beige.
Yeah.
You get colors. You guys are crazy.
What, you just like black, right?
I don't know why.
You like black cars?
All my cars the last 10 years have been black.
Black.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the sunglasses are dark, so maybe it's
I don't know what it is. And my wife has had three or four cars in the last 10 years.
Black.
All black.
Yeah.
Black inside, black outside. Except the Jag. It's got a...
Are we here to
Except
talk
the
about
Jag.
Cream inside?
Are we the here Jag to talk changes about, color according to moods, according to Bob's mood.
Mm-hmm. Are we here to talk about the 50th anniversary of NHL expansion?
We talked about that on a certain show this morning that Bob, I'm sure you were listening to as you were prepping for this show.
Then the trade happened.
What trade?
The 10-player trade?
The 9-player one.
That's 10.
No, one player. 9 players,
no.
one pick.
How is it 10? No, oh, it's stop. 10 guys. There are 10 players in this deal. One of them, we just don't know his name. It's 10. It's a stupid hockey thing.
Well, no, everybody talks about a...
You don't just count the guys. You got to count everybody that's... If there's a pick, that's a guy. So there's 10.
Anyway, so about expansion.
That makes it a better deal.
No, I don't want to talk about expansion.
Oh,
screw that.
Come on, 50 years ago.
No, we're going to talk about Josh Donaldson.
It was a great day, expansion.
Josh Donaldson.
Yep.
Gets a 2-year contract.
Yep.
Allegedly around 28 and change.
Mm-hmm.
That's not very much.
Oh, that's a lot.
Well, he was going to make about...
That's like 11 and 17.
Yeah, he was going to make that in arbitration. I mean, nobody won here. Nobody came out ahead. He gets
his free agency earlier than most... than the Jays wanted?
Well, he just doesn't go to arbitration next year.
Yeah, that's all.
But, I mean, people had been murmuring about a 6-year deal for this guy.
Yeah, but they've got a year of arbitration after this. Then he becomes a free agent. I mean, basically what they... You know what they did? A new general manager and a new president said, oh, we don't need to go to arbitration with this guy. And we got a lot of other stuff on our table. Look, this year we're probably going to have to pay him. He's going to win the arbitration hearing. That's going to be 11.75. Next year, if he has any type of year, we're going to have to pay him 16. You know what? Let's just give him 28. And that's what they did. It has absolutely nothing to do with his long-term future here.
It doesn't.
Doesn't guarantee it. The only thing it does is the 17 or 16 million next year gives you a starting point if you want to negotiate an extension.
Sure.
Hey, for this to make real good sense for the Blue Jays, they would have had to buy out a year of free agency. And when this deal's done, he's still going to have 1 year of arbitration left. So
really, in essence...
It's a nice gesture.
So it's a three-year extension rather than a two, when you think about
it.
Because they have the extra year of arbitration.
They had it anyway.
Here's the thing. You know how much he's going to make this year, next year. You don't know how much he's going to make in his final year of arbitration.
I understand. But right. It's going to be more than 17.
They hope so.
Yes. That's
I think really what it does is it's an effort to establish a relationship, a rapport,
mm-hmm.
that maybe curries some favor when you get to the point of talking about a long-term deal.
And it's easier to build off... your discussions on a long-term deal if you're starting at 17 million. You know, if the Jays sit down with him next year and say, okay, this has gone well, we want to negotiate an extension, the starting figure is 17, something you and the player agreed on. So, you know, you build, we've already agreed you're making this much money. Now let's go from there. It helps a little bit, but it doesn't guarantee his long-term future with the Blue Jays. There's really no benefit to the Blue Jays. I mean, they take the risk. Josh Donaldson tears up his knee this year.
Well, there's some truth in that, I suppose.
You're on the hook for $17 million next year.
Yeah, there's some truth in that.
But you're right. It's new GM.
It's a gesture.
It's a gesture.
It's a gesture. Here, we'll do this, and you make a little bit more than you would have made probably in arbitration. Yeah. And hopefully you'll remember us when we sit down to talk about the longer term.
And you know
deal.
What? The fans are freaking ecstatic.
Sure.
Sure.
Because you've finally done something that everybody likes.
What are they going to do with Batista and Encarnacion? I have long been of the belief that you can't sign both of them.
I've gone from thinking you can't sign both to thinking they'll try to sign Edwin, because there's a sense out there that Edwin is going to be cheaper. I think the fact Edwin is playing hardball with these guys by setting a deadline, and the fact that Jose hasn't set any deadline. My gut tells me that they're probably getting closer to signing Jose Batista than they are to signing Edwin. I think, based on a couple of things I've heard, I think they're going to take a legitimate shot at signing Jose. I don't know about Edwin, but I think there's a feeling that Jose takes such good care of his body and is so... Mark Shapiro used the line with me. He treats his body like a Fortune 500 company. He mm-hmm. treats it like something he is making an investment in, and now he's trying to get the most efficient return he can. I really came away from the discussion with Mark thinking, this guy's leaning towards taking a run at him. Maybe he is that one guy who doesn't fall off the cliff at the age of 34, 35. But I don't think they signed both, Bob. I've done the numbers. I don't know how it fits.
I don't know how it fits either. Unless Rogers is whispering, okay, we'll go to $180 million or go to $200 million.
Or unless Edwin gives you a big hometown discount.
What's he at, around 10?
I thought they were both around 12 this year, weren't they?
I think Batista might be 15.
Yeah, I think Batista's more.
He might be 15. And the other thing, too, that this, where the Donaldson deal is of interest, I think, is this is an organization that has Kevin Pillar, it's got Marcus Stroman, it's got Aaron Sanchez, maybe if he's healthy, Devin Travis. It's got four guys who could really hurt this team in arbitration if they perform well. And I think one of the things this does is it sends a message to them that, you know what, we'll lock you up during your arb years if you perform. You know, look what we're doing for Josh Donaldson.
Sure.
We'll lock you up through your arb years if you perform. And it's also, there's a real change here. And Shai Davidi pointed this out to me today, and I didn't put two and two together. Sometimes I do and I get five, but that's okay. I'm not the only one around here that does that. This time, Shai put two and two together and got four. You've had Ross Atkins say, I don't know if we're going to stick to a hard and fast five-year rule for free agents. Maybe they do, but they're not going to say it publicly. We've had Mark Shapiro say, I'm pretty flexible. I don't believe in deadlines when it comes to free agents. Drew Storen got incentive clauses in his contract for games finished. Gavin Floyd got incentive clauses in his contract for days on the active roster. These are things Alex Anthopoulos would not do. He did not have those incentive clauses. He would not give those out. And I can guarantee you, he would not have signed this contract. He would not have done this because there's no, Alex's approach was always, I got the guy for 3 years, unless there's something for me in the first year of free agency. You know, great, I have to pay him 17 this year. I have to pay him 20. I mean, it's the same. There's no benefit for me to doing this. And I think what we've actually kind of seen here very quietly is you're beginning to see an example of what the philosophy of this organization is going to be and how it's changing it.
Yeah. By the way, I was right. Encarnacion's making 10 and Batista's making 14.
14.
So, but here's the interesting thing. The consensus, I believe, is that Jose Batista will make something in the neighborhood of $23 million in free agency.
Yeah.
What does Encarnacion get? I think it's in the 14 to 16 range.
You know what,
range.
Though, Bob? It's such a crappy free agent class next year. There's nobody. Those guys will go into the free agent class as probably the number one and number three hitter. They may go in as the number one and number two hitter. I don't know who's number two.
Do you know what is going to be the big factor for Edwin?
Nationally getting the DH.
Correct.
Because, boom, all of a sudden that market doubles.
Yeah. And every one of those teams has got to go get one.
Yep.
Because none of them have one.
Oh, yeah. And you're getting a guy who, in a pinch, you can play at first base if you have to. Game gets silly. You can play him at first base if you have to. So
back to Batista. Yeah. What kind of term would you talk for Batista? Three?
Oh, God. I would think he'd be looking for five. This is his last contract.
I was going to say
four.
Okay. So
I might go four and two club options if I'm the Jays.
Because in the end, if you really are playing hardball with Encarnacion, at the end of it, you're really basically saying, near the end of Batista's contract, he's actually going to replace Encarnacion as the DH.
When you
think about it.
Yeah.
If you can get 3 years of him playing right field.
I would think so.
And by the time his body starts to break down, he could be the DH the last 2 years.
You know, maybe he goes to first base. You know, the thing with Jose is, Jose balked in the past at going to third base. But I think if you give him a contract that's his final contract and he's well taken care of, I think he's enough of a guy, enough of a pro that he would say, you know what, if this makes the team better, I'll go to first base.
Yeah.
But first base,
well,
DH,
the wild card in all of this is Tulowitzki,
mm-hmm.
who is a $20 million guy who's eaten up a lot of payroll. And the Blue Jays may feel, let's see what Devin Travis can be. Because we know Goins can play short.
Absolutely.
If Devin Travis is good enough to play and healthy enough to play second base, we haven't seen him for long enough. What we saw of him was pretty good.
It was really good.
Really
good.
And
he's your leadoff guy.
Yes. A lot of things are very, very positive. Today, we're going to wait. But tomorrow, if this all works out, they then have the opportunity to move Tulowitzki.
And you're not going to miss Tulowitzki's bat. I know.
Of course
was,
you are. You're going mean, well, so, to have to. I'm just saying that if you move Tulowitzki, then you could keep Encarnacion. Otherwise, I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
How do you keep all of them? As Jeff said,
you've
got a whole bunch of young players whose salaries are going to go boom, boom,
don't
boom.
Don't forget, Russ Martin goes up, I believe, is Russ 20 this year?
Yeah,
it's something
there's
silly.
Another one.
It's something silly. Maybe not 20.
I mean, I think we had five guys at $85 million at one point last week. We were talking about this.
Okay, but it goes up, right? Okay.
15 next year.
15, okay.
Went from 7 to 15.
7 to 15, which is still a pretty sizable.
That's a big
sizable
jump.
Increase.
And if you look, I mean, Donaldson made 4.5, I think, this year.
Yeah.
So he goes from 4.5 to 11.7 in arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if Stroman has another big year?
Yeah, he's still going to be controllable because of arbitration. He'll make a fair amount of money, but it won't be that.
But it's going to escalate over the next couple, 3 years.
Yeah, but it won't be onerous in the first year, I don't think. I'm just saying. And this is the point, though. And the Cleveland Indians did this. They were the first team to do this. They were the first team to look at young players and say, okay, you know what? Yeah, we've got control of these guys for 4 years, but let's try to make the math work. And maybe we give them an extra $200,000, $150,000 at the front end of their contract, and they cut us a bit of a deal in the back.
Yeah.
And they were the first team to do that. And they did it with a ton of guys. And I would think, you know, if I'm Stroman, Sanchez, and those guys, I'm looking at this and going, shh. I have a good year this year. I'm gonna have a 3 or 4 year contract. I'm gonna be, or maybe even more. I'm gonna be covered through my arbitration years. Like that's the message that's sent. That really counts is the young guys know that this general manager is now prepared to cover their arb years.
Not to be cheeky about it, but how did it work in Cleveland? When you consider, I mean, seriously, how did it work there?
Great. I mean, when John Hart was general manager, and they went to the postseason, and Shapiro did the same thing a little bit, although. He faced some, you know, difficult issues. He had to deal with Robbie Alomar. Sure. He had to deal with Jim Thome. He had some other issues. But that Cleveland under John Hart was kind of the first organization to look at arbitration and say, yeah, let's get our guys. Let's get our guys locked up, you know, especially because they're our guys. These are our kids. We've invested signing a good guy. You've invested $1 million in him. 2 years in the minors. God knows how much that's taken in terms of time and coaching. He has a good year in the majors. You know what? We're going to invest in him. We're going to cover him for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it also makes your budgeting easier.
Well, because, yeah, you don't have, you know.
You know
who, what your core is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Shapiro gets an extra $50 million to play with, give or take. Or maybe a little bit more than 50. What do we have here?
Oh, this is the...
We have statistical data.
This must be the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Payroll going forward.
Yeah, it is salaries.
Yeah, so Tulowitzki is still...
Well, this has Jose Reyes still on it.
That's fine, but it's still updated.
You have to talk into the microphone.
Oh, it doesn't have Tulowitzki. That's
your first day in
radio? Beginning of last season, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is dated. This is irrelevant. Tulo isn't on this list.
So Martin goes to $20 million next year. That's what I was getting at. 7, 15, 20, 20, 20. Hello.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of money.
So now you're going to have potentially 1, 2, 3, maybe 4, 5 guys at $20
million. Yeah. And the only real big contract coming off in that time, well, depending on what happens with Jose or Edwin, but is Dickey's.
Dickey's
$10 million comes off, or $12 million.
Yeah,
is the only one comes off. Anyhow,
if Dickey has a decent year, would you re-sign him?
Oh, no.
No.
No, because I have to.
The issue is that other guy, isn't it?
The issue is the other guy.
You got to bring Tolley in.
But I said that really quickly, and then I'm looking at it.
Well,
if he has a decent year, and again, 200 innings, you know, maybe. Yeah, I shouldn't have been that dismissive. Maybe.
It's not as if his arm's going to go bad on him.
No, and...
Well, he could pitch till he's 50.
That's, you know, and that a lot will depend
sucky
on...
Sucky knuckleball.
I know.
You know, if Hutchison and Happ have any type of year, then he becomes expendable. But, you know, maybe you think about it. I just... You know what?
I'll tell you the reason why you do.
Oh, it's a... Sorry. Club option for $15 million. When is that?
This year, I think.
14 to 15 club option for Dickey. Is that $15 million? And then I say bye bye.
Well, but you could refuse the option and then re-sign him if he wants to come back.
Yeah.
The reason I say that is because at this point, lots of things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have a team that doesn't have a whole bunch of starting pitching.
Yep.
And you don't have that guy ready to break through. That could replace Dickey.
No, you don't have the guy, and you don't have a guy.
And you might
want to
keep him for. You don't have a guy in the minors.
You don't have the guy in the minors ready to step up next year.
No, you don't. That guy doesn't exist that we know of.
How much are they going to miss Mark Burley's innings? Honestly,
well, that
depends.
They'll miss him a lot, but they've got Stroman for a full year. You know, knock on wood, they've got Stroman for a full year. Look, they, you know, Price made 11 starts, right? That's what? That's about 80 innings. I don't know, 75 innings. Burley's gone. That's 200. You're looking at 300 innings.
Yeah.
You hope that Jay Happ replaces that. Jesse Chavez historically is a pretty good starter out of the box. That may help. Drew Hutchison should, you know, hopefully improve a bit. And then you've got Stroman coming back. But, yeah, it's 370-odd innings. That's,
you don't think Sanchez makes the starting rotation?
I just... honest to God, I don't know what to make of the bullpen right now. Osuna could close. Osuna could be the setup guy. Sanchez could close. Osuna and Storen could be. I don't know. I don't know where it's going. Well, I shouldn't say. I don't think Sanchez will close, but I don't know what happens between Storen and Osuna. And then you've got Brett Cecil. Like, how many high leverage situations do you need for Aaron Sanchez?
I understand.
I think. You know, I think you'll probably see Aaron Sanchez stretched out as a starter, but. And again, there, people have this idea that Aaron Sanchez was his great starter last year, and he turned the corner a bit, but he still threw a lot of pitches. You know, he's still a work in progress. There's still a lot
he's
of concern about his health.
He's 22 years old at the time.
He's 22. No,
he showed
exactly.
me plenty. He showed me plenty. I was surprised.
Plenty to be a starter?
Yes.
Oh, I want to
see him as a starter,
yeah,
and I'm
saying,
concerned,
Bob,
that a year and a half in the bullpen.
That's a valid point.
I'm not sure if you can bounce back from that.
Yeah,
I think that's really tough.
Yeah,
I want to find out now what Aaron Sanchez... Now, if Aaron Sanchez goes out over the first 60 days of the regular season and doesn't get it done...
Or gets hurt. That's my bigger concern with him. Is he going to be durable as a starter?
Well, you don't know.
Yeah.
But you're better to do it now than wait another year, right?
If there's no sprinkler heads in.
Well, I mean, I think the thing you do in spring training, you stretch them out because you're gonna be struggling to get innings for all those guys anyhow, for Storen and Cecil and Osuna.
Yeah, we're talking stretch them out. I mean, he's never going to pitch more than five innings probably at any point anyway. It's not that big a stretch.
Yeah, unless spring training you're talking about.
Yeah, in the last 2 weeks, maybe if they've decided they're going to go with him. Then maybe he gets a six-inning start. How many guys pitch more than six innings in spring training? Ever?
Yeah, their
Not
last start, maybe
many.
Their last start.
Maybe.
It depends.
Maybe.
It depends. Mostly now it's pitch counts. And, you know, and I mentioned this guy's name. The other guy to keep in mind is if Drew Hutchison bounces back, there's an entire...
The equation changes
completely.
It's in my mind, it's Hutch or Sanchez. If Hutch can bounce back...
I can see that.
If Hutch bounces back, he's the fifth starter. If he doesn't, then Sanchez is the fifth starter. And Chavez is in Buffalo. And he's your emergency guy. He's your first call-up guy.
Yep.
We got to go.
I'm going to go.
Where are you going to go? You're never gone. You're here all the time.
I'm going home.
Every day.
I worked out. I did some writing. I'm a multi-platform guy. I did my show, did some writing. I'm gonna go home.
Good for you. Thank you for coming in.
No problem. Thank you for having me. Thank you for putting up with me sneaking under the camera.
That was embarrassing. 27 minutes before the hour. Shannon and I will be back in a minute. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Out of London town to go-go. Oh, with the record selection and the mirror's reflection, I'm a dancing all with myself. Oh, when there's no one else inside.
19 before the hour. Bob McCown, John Shannon. Doug McLean will join us next hour. Bob Nightingale of USA Today as well, and maybe a special guest. Stay tuned for that.
Oh, my.
Barry Bonds, in his early days with the Pittsburgh Pirates, was best known for being a disaster in the postseason. Mm-hmm. A guy who would, you know, be an MVP during the regular season offensively and then couldn't hit at all during the postseason.
Was he the same way with the Giants? I think he was the same way with the Giants.
I don't remember exactly. I mean, I know that did turn around after he got on the juice.
World Series against the Angels, he was horrendous.
And it's one case. But I've always subscribed to the theory that you can't predict postseason success by regular season success. As often as not, the two are unrelated. But our next guest led a study on hitters and pitchers, and if I'm accurate in this, look at their they looked at the regular season and were able to project how they would perform in the postseason. There's something in there that worked. Let's find out about it. Kostya Kennedy is a professor at NYU and contributes to Sports Illustrated and joins us. Mr. Kennedy, good of you to take time for us. How are you?
My pleasure. Good to be on with you.
So how do you take regular season statistics and project postseason success?
Well, let me just back up one second because I think,
sure.
Like most baseball fans, I have also, you wonder, is it something that can be predicted? So our goal was really to just address that question. Is it something that can be predicted? And then decide how we would predict it. So first of all, we think we can predict regular season statistics for the most part, right? That's why these guys are getting huge contracts, because you feel that you can make a reasonable guess as to how well they're going to perform. If you didn't think that, there'd be no basis.
Right.
So, but can you do that? And you bring up the Bonds case, Alex Rodriguez, another person who struggled terribly in the
postseason
and had one terrific postseason, but yeah. So really all that we did was we looked at every hitter from the wild card era to now in the playoffs. So the playoffs have got increasingly longer, of course. And we assigned a minimum of 50 at-bats. We would have liked to do 100, but we wanted to get it to be a little bit of a bigger base. We got about 310 players there. And we tried to see whether how many of them really did do better or do worse in the postseason than they did in the regular season. Because remember, those at-bats are so magnified, mm-hmm. right? Somebody goes 0-for-4 in a game, and it's this big deal. Oh, or he's 1-for-15 in the playoffs. Well, there's plenty of times when Mike Trout goes 1-for-15, or maybe not plenty of times, but plenty of times he goes 3-for-15, certainly, over the course of a season, right? It's ebbs and flows. So we looked at all these players, and we calculated, we used for the hitters, let's just talk about them quickly first, we used OPS as our measuring stick, and said, we calculated standard deviation, so the variable that you would expect there to be from OPS, and how many of them varied significantly between regular season and postseason. So of those 310 players, 208 of them, there was no variance whatsoever. So they were, meaning they might do a little better or a little worse, but it was all in the scope of what you'd expect, a few points here or there. And so that's about 70% of all players. But then we did find that there were about only 21 hitters who did significantly better, and there were about 80 who did worse. Mm-hmm. And that maybe stands to reason, because you'd think it'd be a little tougher to hit in the postseason when you're facing tougher pitchers and the weather's a little colder, maybe you're tired, whatever it may be. And that's really the basis of where we are at in the research right now. And that's what we've been talking about and looking if there's a way to marry the quantitative work with here, to me, in some ways, is where old-fashioned scouting comes into play. Is there something that unifies people like Nelson Cruz, Carlos Beltran, Jay Buhner, A.J. Ellis, James Loney. These are all guys who perform significantly better in the postseason than in the regular season.
And do you have an answer to that?
The answer is that we don't really, unfortunately.
Okay, so the answer is no.
That's a long way of saying no.
Yeah, well, here's the dilemma that I have, though. Not to interrupt you, but we're a little tight on time, and I want to make sure we get all this in. I know a little bit about math, and I know that, if you flip a coin, the expectation is 50% heads or 50% tails, but no mathematician is going to accept any series of events probably under 30,000. So if you're going to do any kind of a study, you need 30,000 events in order for it to be technically acceptable or scientific. Right. There's no way that we're not going to get enough events in the postseason of any hitter to be able to accurately ascertain whether they're good or bad or better or worse or predictable or not predictable, are we?
Well, that's a very good question. Obviously, you can't wait for it. We do make predictions and basis on on athletes and specifically baseball players on far fewer than 30,000 events, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell? So a lot of these guys have 100 to 150 at bats. Can you tell enough in that? And that's what we're trying to figure out. I mean, your hesitation and your skepticism is exactly what I came to this with, and what I think we all did. But there does seem to be certain indications. So, for instance, for the guys who are worse, Buster Posey's on the list. Mike Piazza. There seems to be a tendency for guys who are sort of the one really good hitter in a lineup to not do as well in the postseason.
And
pitching around him or whatever it might be.
Your ratio at 70% is a similar number for pitchers?
Similar number for pitchers, yes.
It was, okay.
Yeah, and I should say one other thing, and again, this is in work, but there does seem to be a slight tendency to guys who have good at-bats, what we would call like where they see a lot of pitches, they tend to have what we'd think of as a good at-bat, they do seem to do even better in the postseason. And maybe that totally confirms our intuition, but it is something that has emerged a little bit.
So what's, quickly, what is the advantage in understanding this? How does baseball use this information, if we assume it is accurate, how do you use that to your advantage?
Well, all I think that you could do is if there was any way to predict that a guy would be better in the postseason or even predict that there was a percentage chance that he was more likely to be good in the postseason than someone else, it would increase his value. If you were either an agent or a guy entrusted with signing these players, that is information you would definitely want to have.
Yeah, but a manager can't. I don't see how a manager can use it because essentially we're talking about players who are starters, who play every day, and they're, I know of no manager that is going to alter his batting order in order to accommodate the statistic.
No manager could use it, but if you are a GM, you're deciding if you're going to sign up or Jonas Cespedes, then maybe you can use
again,
it.
Again, the sample size of guys that have, through the period of time you did the measurement, the sample size for guys that were in the postseason that often would have been that much smaller too, right?
So again, we came up with a little over 300 players, so
right.
that's the sample size. It's not huge, but it's not nothing. Now, if we'd had 50 players, we wouldn't have done anything. It just felt like a place where you could begin to do this. And, you know, in 5 years, you'll have 700 players or 600 players, whatever it'll be.
Right.
And maybe you can work a little more.
Well, if you keep the research going and we're still around, we'll call you again and see how we're doing.
I'm holding my breath.
Kostya, thank you very much for joining us. It's interesting. We thank you for your time today.
Great talk with you guys.
Kostya Kennedy is with Sports Illustrated, a professor at NYU. So I mentioned coin flipping.
Yeah.
Here's what I know.
Okay.
So it's a 50-50 chance, right?
One would think, yeah.
Okay. But no mathematician worth his salt would, as I said before, would use less than 30,000 events to actually predict what could happen.
Right. Okay.
And even then, there are variables. We know that if you flip a coin 30,000 times, it's not going to be 15,000 heads and 15,000 tails. Although we know exactly what the probability is. Just to put it in context, what are the chances of flipping a coin 7 times and getting 7 heads or 7 tails in a row?
What are the chances? Now, yeah. You're a gambler. You see, I'm not a gambler. See,
that's why I know these
you're
percentages.
You're a gambler. I would suggest it's
1 in
7.
1 in 127.
Okay. Why? How did you get to that number?
Well, you can do the math. I can't. I don't have time to explain it. But
well, God, we have a commercial.
It's one chance. So every 127 times you flip the coin,
yes,
at least once in that, by projection,
will be
seven heads or 7 tails.
Okay.
And again, that's 127. How many guys get 127 at bats in the postseason?
In their careers. So forget about 1 year.
Not 1 year. You can't get it that many.
Right. That was my point to Kostya.
It's just the sample size is
too small.
It's too small. Doug McLean will join us.
Somebody will make a business out of it, though, in baseball. That's what they do in baseball with numbers. And there'll be a movie about it, and it'll be called something.
We have lots of statistics, and most of them are useless. Doug McLean and Bob Nightingale of USA Today, among others, coming up on Primetime.